Hi.
Hi.
Long time no see.
Yeah. My goal today with
Okay.
this is to give you space to talk more. I'm sorry, I've
Oh,
been
no, that's
so
not necessary. We can start next time. I was reading through my notes and I was like, I don't even remember this scene.
All right
So,
then. On that note, shall we begin, my friend? Shall we begin?
let's begin. First
All
of
right,
all,
welcome. What?
okay, you welcome. And then,
I'm gonna
sorry,
welcome
let me,
everybody and then you
yeah.
can tell me shit, okay?
Okay.
Welcome! Welcome everybody to this week's episode of Squintcast. My name is Kelly.
I'm Brittany.
And today we're gonna be discussing, recapping, making comments, sharing our opinions about Bones Season 4, Episode 6, titled.
The Crank in the Shaft.
Okay,
It's a
like
gross sounding episode.
the name alone. We have things to talk about, especially because you said you liked a particular character.
I love this intern.
Okay.
He's so funny.
No, I'm not
Kelly does
accepting
not
it.
agree. Can
Nope,
we,
nope.
Kelly? Kelly,
What? What?
how many downloads do we have on our
Oh my
podcast?
God. We're here to tell everybody here. First of all you people listening, you don't need to hear this, but we're going to say right now, we're so excited because we just received notice that our podcast has had 10,000 overall downloads of all time. And you know what? I'm no My Favorite Murder. I'm not a Joe Rogan. I'm not somebody with like a what's his name armchair fucking expert dude. I'm not that person who has a I'm not Conan O'Brien, okay? I don't have millions and millions of downloads, but I have scraped and scrimped, and we have climbed this mountain of downloads, and we finally got to this place of 10,000. I remember, can I tell you? I'm going to tell you a statistic right now, and I don't care if none of you are interested. I'm going to tell you something interesting. We waited a year before publishing, right?
Yes.
We were recording for a year before we started publishing this podcast because I was like on the fence and I was so worried and I was so scared to put it out there. It took almost a year for us to get maybe less than 2,000 downloads, less than
Yeah.
2,000. And then the year after that, our listenership jumped 400%. It went from, X amount to over like 7 or 8,000 downloads. And I'm telling you, every thousand has been. It's like an amazing goal for me. I get so excited when I see that
Same.
people are downloading and listening. And it's just exciting for me. And I don't know. I wish I could send everyone a big virtual hug to thank them for listening and being part of this interesting and incredible kind of journey that Brittany and I have decided to embark on. So thank you so much for being there and supporting us. Really
Yes.
grateful. Thank you.
It's very exciting.
Ah, so nice.
I love it. Well, on that note,
Yes.
shall we try to get to 11,000 views, 11,000 downloads?
Let's go for another 1,000, baby. And like 10
Okay.
years from now, we're gonna be like the most famous podcasters on the planet, and people will be laughing and laughing when they're listening to this, going, oh, if only they knew the future. Either that or it'll be like an apocalypse. Who knows, right?
Maybe, or Wayne will go to school and be like, "My mom has a podcast." And people will be like, "Shut up."
And they'll all have one too, believe me, all those
Probably
kids.
with their TikToks. Anyway.
Exactly.
Okay. Do you want to know who directed and wrote this episode?
Yes.
Also, this episode was, it aired October 1st, 2008, but remember, we had a writer's
Yes.
strike. So this episode was meant to be episode 18 of season 3.
Wow. This is okay. This is going to come up later because I have something. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. That's there's great. Some timing issue. There's not even issues, but like timing things.
It's the way episode. People are behaving. It's the way people are behaving.
Yes. Yes. Okay. We're on the same page for sure. Okay. So this episode was written by Elizabeth Benjamin, who we have fondly had opportunities to experience her writing of before. That was not English, but we're going with it. So in season three, she wrote Soccer Mom in the Minivan.
Oh my God.
And Santa in the Slush.
Oh my God.
She wrote in season two, The Woman in the Sand and Spaceman in a Crater.
Wow. And
in season one, she was the executive story editor on the entire first season, other than the first episode. And she wrote The Man in the Morgue, The Superhero in the Alley, and The Man in the Wall.
Wow. This woman,
she's got some good episodes.
Written some classic. Man in the Wall alone. I was thinking about that episode.
That was such a good episode.
I was thinking about that episode the other day and how crazy I was acting because of Morris Chestnut and what's his face? Bokey Woodbine. I just think every time I see him, I'm like, Bokey. I just love it.
It was such a good episode. It was so out there.
It really was. That was Mark when Booth had a girlfriend, remember?
Oh, yeah. She came to the door with just his shirt on, and we were like, ooh. Was Brennan that has a car because she showed drove up, herself there.
This was when she showed up with him after having dinner with him, and he brought her to the crime scene and like didn't even give her money to take a cab home. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
And this one, she did his laundry for him, and I was really mad.
Didn't they break up at the end of that episode?
Maybe because she did his laundry and I was mad at him for making her bring his fucking laundry to him. And then she was hoping to go to Jamaica. And then they had this whole discussion about what stage their relationship was in. Anyway.
Yeah. We just need to get Bones and Booth just have to get together.
Enough.
We're going to wait so much longer.
Who directed this stuff?
Stephen DePaul directed this episode.
Stephen DePaul?
The Truth and the Lies, season 2, episode 5. The Secret in the Soil, season 3, episode 4. The Man in the Outhouse, season 4, episode 3. And now The Crank in the Shaft. And then he goes on to, he does 4 more episodes in the season. And that's it for Stephen DePaul.
We loved him. He did a lot of interesting shots, I remember. Early on in the season, didn't he do that weird shot with Hodgins and Sweet sitting across from each other in their chairs? It was like a shot from the floor.
Yeah.
Looking up at them. It was kind of Hitchcockian. I like this Stephen DePaul. He does like interesting things. So,
well, he starts out, even the beginning of this episode, the way it starts is very interesting, I thought.
I think it's great.
Also,
a great tone.
Did you watch this episode more than once?
Yes.
Did you find that when you watched it the second time, I was completely caught off guard who the killer was? And when I watched it the second time, it was so obvious.
Really? I didn't think it was obvious. Maybe I wasn't paying that much attention because I was making notes, but I felt it was really out of left
it was out
field,
of nowhere.
But I noticed, we'll talk about it. There's like
some of the behaviors and stuff.
The behavior was like, a little much. It was a little extra.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it. Anyway.
Yes. Okay.
On that
should
note,
should we get
shall
started?
Shall we begin? Yes. Let's please start us off, Brittany.
Okay. So the very beginning of this episode, we have a bunch of people, office workers, getting into an elevator. They're clearly... So most of them seem to know each other. They're going up to work in some lovely office, clearly. The doors are about to close. Some guy puts his arm in, typical when you're trying to get somewhere in the morning, and rushes into the elevator holding his coffee. Someone makes a comment about how the coffee machine at the office doesn't work. And so they're just having little conversations here and there. One of the things, one of the people that's mentioned is one of the guys says, "Oh, how's the third quarter P&L?" And the other guy says, "Oh, I processed a stack of orders and returns with Patty on Friday." Someone named Patty. Will this person come up again? We will see.
Oh my God.
Anyway.
Everybody. Hey, everybody. Anyway. Guess what?
Patty's important. Keep it in mind. Anyway. And then suddenly they're
you
all
have
like
no faith. You have no faith in our listeners to be able to like follow along at all. You have to like, it's like you're dealing with Wayne. You have to like spell it out for them. Hey, everybody, this person, Patty, is important.
Keep that in mind. So suddenly the elevator like starts shaking and it loses power. It's like my worst, absolute worst nightmare. This elevator completely stops. What?
Is it falling? Is it free falling? Like, what's going on with this elevator?
I think it just got stuck. Like, it didn't, they didn't seem to be bracing like they were falling, but it was just like,
it's like
oh.
Total it hell. It's scary as hell. It's like,
it's terrible.
Oh my God, I'm going to die. Like,
this is my worst nightmare that I'm going to get stuck in an elevator.
100%.
And so people are like, oh my God, what's going on? Everyone starts like smelling this like bad smell. And then a leg with a heel on it drops from the ceiling and everyone looks like they're about to puke. So that's great.
It was a really disgusting leg too. It's like all like macerated and covered blood.
Mangled.
And I love like everybody looking around the elevator when they started smelling something, like they were accusing everybody of farting. It was really funny.
But like that would smell so horrible that it would not, like, if someone farted like that, like, they need to go to the hospital.
Well, yeah, because it would smell like rotten meat.
Yeah. Like, that's a hospital situation. That's not, like, a regular fart.
Disgusting.
Disgusting. Anyway, do you want to take us away? Where are we next?
Well, next we're cut to a scene with Booth and Brennan. They're having a session with Sweets, and it looks like Sweets is kind of trying to hypnotize them or do some kind of meditation session with them. They have their eyes closed, maybe, but Booth is sitting there, and he's just shaking one of his legs, like shake, 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 jitter, 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 and Sweets is trying to tell them about the subconscious mind, and Brennan goes, "Stop!" And Sweets thinks she's talking to him. And she's like, "No, Booth's fucking leg is driving me crazy. Please stop shaking your leg. Didn't you notice that he was fucking shaking his leg this whole time?" And Sweets goes, "Yeah, but I thought that's just because he wanted to leave, like he always wants to leave." And then we find out in this conversation that one of Booth's coworkers died recently. And they're all feeling sorry for him until Booth tells him, "No, the guy was a creep, and I just want his office chair." Like, apparently his office chair is on the block, so everybody's vying for this coveted office chair. Do you have this in your office where you want to steal people's office supplies?
No, definitely not. Although, yes, okay, I went on maternity leave. I will announce that I went on maternity leave in November 2021.
Oh God, what did they do?
And when I returned, my printer was no longer in my office.
That's
and this
a travesty.
Is a serious, yes.
That is
because
a
that
travesty.
Printer was amazing.
The only one that worked, probably. That's why everybody wanted it.
And now my printer is a piece of garbage. So I need to get a new one. I haven't gotten around to it because
do
I just used it as an excuse to walk. I think I did figure it out at one point, and then I decided I didn't really care enough to try to get it back.
Wow. That's wild. It is interesting. People do sort of pillage when somebody leaves. They get fired.
Oh,
they
yeah.
Die. They're like, "Oh, who's going to take their like stapler or whatever?"
That's
another Office Space reference, too. If you ever watched that movie, Office Space, I talked about.
I did watch it. Yeah.
Oh, you know the guy who plays Newman. The guy who
the
has
guy
the
who ends
stapler.
Up in the office in the basement.
He's got the red stapler. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, they're having this session. Booth wants this guy's chair because he apparently has a bad back. And this is our B plot line, which is like absolutely ridiculous. So he tries to like kind of like sweet talk Brennan into writing him a doctor's note so that he'll have an excuse to get this office chair. And then she says no. And then he tries to get Sweets to do it. And Sweets is like, no friggin' way. And then Brennan gets a call. Oh no, Booth gets a call on the phone. That's right. And they leave. They have to go to a crime scene. They get up and leave so fast. Like, it's crazy. Like, the second they get this call, they're like, okay, bye. And they leave. And Sweets is like, why the hell are you going? Because they were trying to, he was trying to talk to him about why Booth wants this chair. And like, Brennan's accusing him of being like, I don't know, dishonest, and like he wants a throne. Anyway, they're just having this discussion about the chair, and he runs out to go to the crime scene. I thought it was really funny.
Oh yeah, and poor Sweets is sitting there like, oh, listen, I thought we were going to touch on something pretty important, guys.
Sweets, I'm telling you, Sweets, I hope soon, because I'm really hoping soon somebody takes Sweets seriously. I hope so. Because
he's so awesome.
But it's like they're so disrespectful. Like,
you're so mean.
I am the first person to admit that I am an asshole, and I love it when they bully him. Like, I think it was last episode they were giving him a hard time about about living with his mother, and you live with your mommy. Like, they're just teasing him, right?
Oh yeah. And, who was the last person you lived with? Your mommy?
Yeah, well, he said, I have lived with a woman. I was like, oh, was that woman your mother? Like, that's funny. I'm sorry. It's really funny. But someday I hope they treat him better.
Maybe one day. Did you catch the Agent Charlie reference?
No.
Even though he has totally disappeared from the planet, Booth references Agent Charlie as being someone who put a request into HR when this guy was on his deathbed. Like, this, he wanted his chair so badly that the guy hadn't even died yet, and he's like, I want the chair.
Oh, wow.
Give it to me.
I love, that's great. Agent Charlie lives on.
He lives on, even though the actor is off doing other projects. Okay. So.
Okay. Hold on one second.
Yes.
Greg is talking so loud right now. I just need to know what's happening. Hold on. Oh, never mind. Sorry.
Is he on the phone?
No, Luke's here. I was like,
oh.
Him and Luke are talking so loud. I was like, what the hell? I thought somebody was having an argument, but I think it's just the way Slovenians talk to each other.
Just so they can hear each other very well.
Literally. Does Mark's family do this?
No, I'm the loud talker in my family.
Oh,
in this
really?
Family. It's so bad. Mark is like, shh. Stop. Like, mid-conversation, he's like, shh. You're being so loud.
Wow.
I'm like, oh.
No, I have to do that to Greg because he doesn't know. Like, I think it's just him living with like five siblings and like
probably
they were just loud, yelling at each other constantly. Anyway.
I just don't have like a volume moderator in my body or something. Anyway, everything's fine. Okay.
Okay, what's next?
So we end up back at this office building where this leg was found. Booth and Brennan are walking in, and Booth is trying to explain to her why he wants the office chair, and she just is not getting it at all. And he says, he's like, well, when you work for the man, then he buys the office furniture. And she's like, oh, like, which man? Like, she's never heard of this concept before. Anyway, so they finally get to the scene, and they're going through this crowd. They're trying to get to the elevator, and Cam is already there looking at his leg. So they walk through, and anyway, Cam already knows about the chair, apparently. So that's enough. She stops that conversation right there. So she's saying, okay, there's this pump. there's a female victim. The victim is between 20 and 40 years old, and she agrees with what Kelly already said. It looks like the flesh on the leg is kind of scraped away and scavenged. It doesn't look so good. So here we are having this very intense, serious scene. And the guy who was holding his coffee to get into the elevator last second in our very first scene starts taking a picture of Cam. And Booth is like, what are you doing? Have some respect. Like, this is a body here. The guy's like, you are the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in the elevator. Cam, it's so creepy. Anyway, Cam seems a little flattered and she just kind of smiles and moves on. And we immediately find out after this guy is taken away that they actually found more than just the leg. On top of the elevator is the rest of the body, and all the way down the shaft are other bits and pieces of this poor victim. So it's pretty gruesome.
It's pretty gross.
The best look.
I would be wearing something on my head in case something fell on my hair. I'd be wearing like Booth goes up there and it must smell so bad. Like, it's not
the same thing.
Rotting meat, it's the blood. Like, the smell of blood is like, it's creepy.
Yeah.
I thought about
they
being
don't really
a,
react
a crime
to
scene
it.
Cleaner. I know.
No.
But that's what they do. I considered it because it's good business, you know?
Yeah.
And I have a strong stomach, but there is a smell factor that might, you know, I'd have to get over things like that, you know?
Oh, that'd be a difficult job.
I agree. So what are we doing here? So Cam and Brennan and Booth all agree that the victim obviously fell from a great height. So they decide to check out the very tippity top top of this building. They're escorted by a security guard who insists that the door that leads to a room where all the mechanics of the elevator, like what's that called? The cables and stuff that lift the elevator are all there. He says, nobody, you know, it's locked all the time. Nobody has access, only maintenance people. And then, of course, Booth arrives and he kicks the door open because the lock's been jimmied. Can we say jimmy anymore? I don't know if they're allowed to. But anyway, the lock has been tampered with.
I think
with.
It's okay.
Well, I don't know what the origin of it, so I'm not going to say it. The lock has been tampered with. So he gets in there. He's like, oh, I guess nobody comes in here, right? Anyway, turns out, in this little room where all the elevator mechanisms are, there's this sort of shaft that has an opening that someone might be able to stuff a body into. Like, when I saw this hole, I was like, okay.
It would have to be a very thin body.
You'd have to be a teeny tiny person to shove in here. You'd have to be. And then, because they're looking around, Booth finds the remnants of a joint, like somebody's in a smoking pot up there. And he makes a comment about, oh, maybe somebody got high and shoved a body through there. And I was like, listen, buddy, listen. Nobody who's high is going to stuff a body in a hole.
No.
Like, they're going to go, oh, man.
We'll have a snack. And
they're
like,
going
to
go
eat
something. They're going to have a nap. They might do some sort of like menial kind of focused task, but they're not going to do physical labor and like lift a body. That's insane.
Not to lift a body and like contort it through this tiny opening.
You'd have to be like shoving it into the hole with all your might. It's like crazy. Yeah.
No, anyway. Not happening. And then we have our intro.
Yes.
Copyright infringement, not necessary because it's totally different.
And sounds terrible. So here we go.
Sounds amazing every time.
Thank you.
Okay.
Back at the lab.
Back at the lab. We are going to meet Colin Fisher, our newest intern. And he is there with Hodgins and Cam. And he is intense. This guy puts the emo in emo. No, that doesn't, that, no, that didn't work. He's just very emo. He has this lip ring that is right in the middle of his lip on the bottom. He's extremely tall, very lanky, and has just this horrible outlook on life and is very depressing. He's like the person version of Eeyore. He talks about, at any opportunity he gets, he talks about how everything is painful and violent and hopeless. So anyway, Cam and Hodgins are just like, Hodgins actually, I think, is loving it a little bit. He finds it pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
But Cam is like, are you okay? Is everything okay? Anyway, he's very helpful. They're actually working pretty well together as a team, despite how depressing he is. They figured out that the victim died sometime between Friday night and Saturday morning. So that helps.
And how did they find that out, Brittany?
With the eyeball. Her eyeball confirmed time of death. Which is so cool. Yeah.
I was gonna look this up. I was like, is this like real?
It must be. She says it's from the vitreous humor from the eyeball. So somehow, is that I think that's some sort of liquid maybe in the eye. Anyway, are you going to look it up?
Yeah, you can keep talking and I'll look it up.
Very cool. So this victim, her last meal was a gyro. So Cam has already got the FBI looking into Greek restaurants in the neighborhood, seeing if they delivered. She was at the office, presumably, so she would have gotten food delivered in. She died before she fell, so that's something that's important to know. Tox screens came back negative. She didn't have any drugs or poison. She didn't even have she did not even drink coffee. And so basically it's up to Fisher to figure out how this girl died, because there's not much otherwise that's making it clear. Yes, Kelly.
Okay. Listen to this.
Okay, I'm ready.
You ready for some hard science?
Love science.
We got to get your sister on here.
We really do.
Potassium measurements in the vitreous humor to estimate the PMI are associated with improved accuracy and precision in determining this time since death. They are not affected by external factors, making them a reliable marker for the same. Because I think it's like a gelatinous kind of collagen that's in your eyeball. It's not exposed to the air and isn't affected by the environment. It's like enclosed. Isn't that crazy? What?
That is really cool.
Plus, if you think about it, your eyeballs are part of your brain.
Yeah.
It's the only part of your brain that's outside of your body.
Yeah.
So like probably got lots of information in it.
Probably. This is the first time they've ever mentioned using the eyeball as a tool to find
I think
time
it's
of
great
death.
And I hope we hear more about it. And also this guy Fisher.
I love him. He's so funny.
Two things.
Okay.
Have we talked about what he said that makes me hate him?
No. We did not talk about Hot Chick yet. Do you want to take it away?
Well, the first thing I'll mention is that Cam says in their conversation that she has the win. I got the win, she said, because she said she had time of death. So I'm wondering if she's determining herself king of the lab with this statement.
I took that as when, like W-H-E-N.
Oh,
I got the win.
I've got the win. Okay. I thought she said I've got the win, and I thought, oh, is she king of the lab? Anyway, you're right. Of course.
That would be great. That would be so awesome.
I would love it if Cam would just say, I'm king of the lab. Anyway.
In your face, Hodgins.
Fisher is so macabre. Like his... Every time he opens his mouth, he like waxes philosophical about, you know, how life is
short and meaningless,
terrible and short, and we're all gonna die. And anyway, he's just, it's really quite funny, and it's funny for a while, but anyway, he wants to find out, or Cam wants Fisher to find out the cause of death, and he's kind of complaining about this task because it's so difficult, because of course she's in many pieces, right?
Yeah, this victim, like 1300 pieces
scraped against the elevator shaft. Yeah. And then he says, I have the hot chick making a sketch. And Hodgins perks up because he knows he's talking about Angela when he says hot chick. And this is where I leave you, Brittany. I wrote down in my notes, Brittany likes this character and she must answer for this. And we will spend the rest of the show discussing why she has such bad radar for these people. I don't understand why you like this guy. Because then Cam, she takes a little umbrage with this. She goes, oh, hot chick, eh? And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I mean the other hot chick. And I'm just saying, this is why Fisher's not going to stay here. He's not. He can't. You're fired. You're fired.
He has to be fired.
Him
many more times.
No!
His character actually becomes quite lovable. It's awesome.
I'm sure he is, but I mean, this really, I was like, this was very telling too of the time period, right? Like,
yes.
You would never, no one would say that. Like, Cam is the director of the Jeffersonian Institute's medical lab. You don't call her a fucking hot chick. Like, that's like so disrespectful.
It's interesting though, because she doesn't, if Hodgins pulled that on her, she would rip into him. But with this guy, she's just like, okay, moving on.
Again, her tolerance level, her level of tolerance with these people, she just has to put up, like, because she's dealing with like geniuses, basically.
It's impressive.
They have no ability to like read the room properly. And like, she has to just accept that they're fucking weird.
Well, Hodgins, after Cam gets called hot chick, Hodgins pulls a bow from a bunch of evidence on the table. And this bow has brown hair, which he thought might help Angela as she's doing her sketch. So Cam is like, great, okay, take it to her. And he's like, oh, I'm busy, I don't really want to do that. And she's like, yeah, I'm your boss, and I'm saying that you are going to go do that. So go to it. So yeah, that's super awkward. Which I want to come back to that in just a second. But
okay.
Then Fisher talks about how he's found some fissures on the bones that appear to prove that the victim had fallen from a great height. And his grad thesis, it was specific, that's why he got hired at this lab. And the grad thesis was exploring the effects of falls on human bone. So Cam is like, oh yeah, how did you come up with that idea? And he's like, oh, from this summer job I had. And she's like, oh, I'm afraid to ask where that was. And he's like, oh, suicide hotline. And she just looks at him and she's like, were you for or against? And he just looks at her like, oh. It was so funny. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I think the character on his own is not that great, but how he interacts with Cam, I think, is hilarious. Okay. Is your problem with the timing of this episode how fresh Hodgins and Angela's breakup seems to be? Like, it seems way more fresh than the last episode.
Well, let's
episode.
talk about this next piece, and yeah, we can touch on that, because I have a comment about how they're behaving.
They're behaving very strangely. Hodgins goes into Angela's office and brings this bow. And because he's like, oh, like, I have this bow for you. And Angela immediately is like, look, like, we decided that this relationship is over and I don't want any gifts from you. And he's like, yeah, this is from the victim. So it is. And she's like, oh, yeah, that's super helpful. Thank you. Yeah. And he's like, you know, like, I'm fine with us working together. It's cool. I'm cool. Everything is fine. They're both like, yeah, we're just two professionals. Everything's fine. Yeah, everything is not fine. It is so fucking awkward. They, like, eventually part ways, but it's like, the tension is so awkward. I cannot understand for the life of me why these two broke up.
Okay. Couple things. Have you ever known a woman like this that every time a man like talks to them, they think they're hitting on them?
Yes.
I knew somebody like this, and she stopped doing it now that she's almost 60, but she honestly
that's thought good.
Like every man that walked up to her was hitting on her, and she'd be like, I am not. No, I'm not going into a relationship. And it's just like, I'm just asking you where to park my car. Like,
I'm just asking where the washroom is.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, it was just funny.
I have a boyfriend.
Like, well, not even. She was nice. Just like, okay. Nobody asked.
A good for B, you.
Honey, you're not that desirable. Anyway.
The personality didn't help.
I'm glad you told me at the beginning, like, where this episode was supposed to fit. So, technically, they're supposed to have broken up like last season, but now you're telling me that this is within the same season.
It would have been, yeah.
And I'm curious about the timeline. Like, I don't know. Like, we were just dealing with Hodgins being angry and moody and mean. Like was it last episode?
Literally last episode. Yeah.
And now he's being like
timid.
He's being weirdly like awkward and timid. And this guy is a billionaire. Brittany, yeah. Do I have to tell you this again?
Yeah.
He'd be dripping in pussy.
What was the phrase you used?
Girls
in the last...
would be lined up. He's a billionaire.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, man.
It just doesn't make any sense.
And Angela has no chill. I'm just going to say this right now that I do not like her in this episode at all. I just don't understand.
She's being weird. Hell.
She's being very strange. And I know it's because they don't really want to be broken up. Yeah. I know they really don't want to be apart. They're pretending to be broken up. It's like a weird kind of...
It's so weird.
...act they're putting on. I don't get it. It's all awkward. They agree to be cool with each other, though, which is great.
Yeah, super professional, very grown up of them, except the way they go about it is so immature, but that's fine. So, this Fisher guy, as depressed as he is doing a great job. He has figured out that this victim fell from at least 60 meters. And Cam can't believe it. She's like, not even Brennan would figure this out. And then he explains to her about his grad thesis again and says, okay, let's work some math here. If I'm right, then this victim would have had to fall from the top floor or the machine room above it. So that would really narrow our search area. This would be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so... Cam is so impressed. She's like, Mr. Fisher, great job. Very, very impressive. And he looks at her and is like, well, I'll still end up like her one day. And Cam's like, you think about getting a girlfriend, Mr. Fisher? And he already has one. Pulls a picture out of his wallet and shows her. And Cam's like, wow, she's really beautiful. And he says, yes. For now. And I'm like, oh my god, is this guy okay? Is he gonna make it
it's
through
so
this episode?
Funny. It's so funny. Hey, quick question, how many feet is 60 meters from which the victim fell? Ballpark.
Well, there's about 3 feet per meter, right?
I'm asking.
So 60 feet would be 20 meters. Is that going the wrong way?
Wow. 60 meters is about 200 feet.
Oh, we're going meters to feet. I thought we were going feet to meters.
Okay, I was worried there. I'm like, don't let Brittany do your accounting, please.
If we're going the other way, I would have multiplied it by, I would have said 180. But what are you saying? 220?
It's fine. About 200 feet. I looked it up. It's like 197 feet or something. Yeah. Which is really high. It's 200 feet is really high.
That is extremely high. Which is why. Yeah. Okay. So he's saying at least 60 meters. So that would have to be, it would make sense. It would have to be from the top of the building, basically.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Crazy.
So.
So. What do we got? What's next? So we have, next we have Booth and Brenner returning to the office building where the leg was found. And they're going to ask around if anybody's missing. They found a key card for a woman who works in this office who looks similar to a sketch that Angela made.
What's her name?
Her name is Patty, the one that Brittany told everyone to remember about in the first scene. Everybody following along? Well, there's going to be a quiz at the end of this. Apparently, Angela's sketch led them here. We learn, you know, they're talking, they're bantering, him, Brennan, Booth, Brennan. We learn that Cam actually wrote a note for Booth so that he could get this office chair that everybody wants. And then Booth starts commenting. This is my favorite part of the episode, is this commentary on office work and working in offices and how he's like this awful work environment. And then Brennan's like comparing, saying that Booth is similar to these office workers because he's a drone, like he works for the man, quote unquote. And anyway, Booth is taking offense to this at every turn because he doesn't think that he's at all like these office people. I don't like how obtuse Brennan is being in this episode. I feel like she's regressed a little bit in her character, in her understanding of the world around her. And I find that a little bit frustrating. I don't like it when Brennan acts like she doesn't know where she is half the time. So they go up to the receptionist. This receptionist is fielding calls left, right, and center. This fucking phone is not, it's ringing, ringing, ringing. She's like answering, answering, answering. It's insane how much this phone is ringing. There is no office in the world that's like this. The only thing that stops her from answering the phone is when Booth presents his FBI identification to her and she stops in her tracks. And then Booth shows her the fucking badge with the woman on it named Patty. And in the photograph, the woman is wearing the yellow bow that Hodgins found in scraped remains from the elevator shaft. This to me is insane, and it made me laugh so hard that she was wearing this yellow bow on the side of her head. Like, hey, everybody, mostly bows are in the back, right? But in the photograph, she's like, got this big bow on the right hand side.
Look at my bow. I wear it every day. Hey, I would have it on me if I died.
You know how Brittany said that her name was Patty? Well, remember when we talked about the bow? It's like they don't trust the audience to understand that this woman is Patty with the fucking bow. And before we go any further, the receptionist is like, oh my God, she's freaking out because like, oh my God, is it Patty? Was Patty in the elevator? Oh my God. And Brennan's like trying to keep her quiet because she's like, oh, we haven't confirmed with dental records yet. And I was like, how dare you go to this office? How dare, like, what about her family?
Oh, yeah. And even like, and then this other guy across that walks up and this guy Chip, he walks up. He's like, what's going on? Oh, Patty. It was Patty. Everyone. It was Patty.
Oh, my God.
And the boss comes out and is like, oh, no, not Patty.
Not Patty.
It was Patty.
Guys.
Oh, my God.
Guys, we don't need DNA. We don't need dental records. We don't need to talk to the family because it's Patty. It's Patty.
And we have nosy colleagues that will confirm it for her. Oh my God. Okay.
Wow. What happens
next? So next we have Gary. Gary is Patty's boss. Mm-hmm. He is bringing us over, us being Booth and Brennan, over to Patty's cubicle. And oh my God, this woman. Like, there are a lot of frogs. She painted these frogs herself, apparently. She decorated the place herself, according to Gary. No kidding. Not surprised. He did not need to say that. Anyway, so Brennan takes the opportunity to jab Booth a couple times about this office chair that he really wants and calls him a drone. Anyway, Gary makes the point that typically, other than Patty, typically everyone just left at 6. Like, it was like the running of the bulls right at 6, especially on Friday. Everyone out when they were at 6 o'clock. And so they're like, okay, well, Patty was still here. Did she have any enemies? And he says, well, you have to break a few eggs to make an omelet. So anyway, they have this joint as well. So Booth takes the opportunity to ask if any of the employees have ever been caught smoking weed. And Gary immediately, like, doesn't even take a second. It's just like, marijuana, no. Oh, let me tell you about Ted Russo, who was arrested last year. But it was at some, like, concert in a park. It wasn't at work. And he's promised that he's a really good worker and hasn't actually touched the stuff since. And, of course, we're going to have an immediate scene next with this guy, Ted Russo, pouring Fruit Loops on a peanut butter sandwich. Clearly high as a kite. This guy has definitely touched marijuana since. And at first, when Gary goes over with Booth and Brennan, at first when they're questioning, he's like, no, man, I just have allergies. Everything's fine. Like, back off, man. And they're like, well, you know, we could pull DNA off of that joint we found. And he's like, oh, man. Yeah, like, I just smoke a little weed, but it's not like I killed anyone. And he immediately says, no, I didn't kill Patty. This wasn't me. But he still gets taken down to the station and he ends up in the interrogation room. Yes.
This part where Ted admits to smoking pot at work because it's a horrible job and he's an artist and it's like terrible. The only reason he has a job is because his father cut him off. Anyway, it's really funny.
He says it in front of his boss.
But we get like his full character. I love it. I love Ted's arc. Yeah. Ted's arc is probably the most fascinating character arc of the whole episode. And the way he nudges Booth, like he hits him, like, come on, man, you get it. Like, you understand where I'm coming from. And Booth, the way he looks at, like, when he touches Booth and Booth looks down, like, he looks like he's going to start a bar fight. This is the way that Booth acts. Like, his face is like, did he just touch me?
Did he touch my body? Does he want to fight?
I'll touch your body. Don't worry. I'll do it. I'll take the hit.
I'll do that for you. Like,
okay. So David, where Boreanaz, are we?
Don't worry. I will do that.
Back at the FBI.
Ba, 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 ba.
They're interviewing Ted. And Ted's denying killing Patty. He's kind of freaking out. Then they show a picture of, apparently it was Patty's car was keyed and the word bitch was written into her car. And he's like, I didn't freaking do that. And then they do this a couple of times where they threaten to get a court order for DNA or whatever. And they say, give me your keys, right? And he's like, no way, man. He's like, I'll get a court order. You have to give them to me anyway. So he just gives the fucking keys to him. And my question is, like, where are all the lawyers? Like, I would, before
there are none.
Before I arrived at the FBI, I mean, hello, friend who is a defense lawyer. Can you please
1-800 lawyer?
Yeah, help me out here.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why he did not come with a lawyer. He's completely denying carving the word bitch into this girl's car. So I guess maybe he feels like it's safe for him to give the keys because he's like, well, I didn't do it. Here you go.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just going to say this as a PSA to all our listeners. And we all know this now that we listen to true crime podcasts and we all watch Dateline and we all watch 48 Hours and we all watch all these crime shows. Okay. Do not go to the FBI without calling your lawyer to meet you there. And don't answer any fucking questions.
No matter how innocent you are.
Regardless of the fact that you're innocent. Exactly. Especially if you're innocent.
Yeah. You got to protect yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Now, so, I'm just going to say this next scene, we're back at the lab and it's the most useless scene on the planet. I'm going to let Brittany talk about it. It made me so
mad.
It's
kind of funny though. So they're back at the lab. Well, we're back at Brennan's office and it's just Brennan and Angela. And Brennan is quite impressed by this new intern, who she calls the depressed intern. She finds him to be quite clever. Angela's not there to talk about this new intern, though. She just wants to talk about how she doesn't know how to act around Hodgins because they were in such an intense relationship. Now everything is just tense. Anyway, she needs to chill. She puts Brennan in this position where Brennan's like, okay, well, what do you want me to say to you? I'm not really sure what you need of me right here. And so she's like, well, Hodgins and you are both my friends, but I could fire Hodgins if you wanted me to. And Angela's like, what? No, please don't do that. But that was very sweet of you to offer Brennan. Anyway, and then she obviously, I guess she realizes she's not going to get what she needs out of this conversation. So she just stands up and walks off. And Brennan's like, oh, so I helped you? And she's like, yeah, sweetie. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It was you did great, and gives her a thumbs up.
Why is Angela asking Brennan for advice? Brennan.
She knows how it goes.
Also, Brennan in this episode is, she's written obtusely, like season one, Brennan. A, B. How are they best friends?
I don't know.
If you best did work this friends. To me, if you did that to me, like, I don't know. Sure. Whatever. Do you want me to kill him? No? All right. Bye. It's just like, oh my God. Like, who are these people?
It's, yeah, they're, I think Brennan doesn't know how to be a friend to Angela, and Angela doesn't really know how to be a friend to Brennan either.
We've already decided that Brennan is a much better friend to Angela than Angela is to Brennan. A, B. Yeah. We both agree. We agreed
we
on that.
We did agree.
Angela's acting
very
like
take.
Fucking weirdo. Exactly.
She is.
She's acting like such a weirdo in this episode, and I don't like how either she or Brennan has been necessarily written in this episode. Their exchanges, I don't get it.
Are odd. Well, Angela also is technically the one who broke up with Hodgins because she thinks that he doesn't trust her, and she's being so weird. Like,
she's the one.
Oh, I'm still in love with him.
Who left?
Yeah.
And made a big point that he doesn't trust her. It's like,
it's
well,
so stupid.
Okay, but you walked away, so how can he trust you?
Exactly.
Oh, anyway.
Okay. So, well, next. We end up back in the lab, and Booth walks in. Well, it's in, I guess it's in Cam's, is it in her
it's
office?
It's in her autopsy
Cam's
room.
Office?
I thought it was the autopsy
so,
room.
Booth walks in and is like, hi. I got the letter that you're going to send. And yeah, you can't send this letter for me to get this chair because it makes me sound like I can't work there. Like an invalid. And so it talks about how he has a herniated disc and he's basically completely, totally, horribly injured. And he needs this chair so he can survive. And she's like, well, that's too bad. I already sent it. You're welcome. And he walks off like sulking. But he gets what he wants, I guess. He got what he wanted. He got her to write the letter.
He got her to write the letter, and she offers to get back to them and say, oops, sorry, I was mixing him up with a dead person, like, just to help him out, but whatever. It's just so silly. Regardless, Cam was acting stupid in that scene, too. Why are the women written so like they're dummies? I don't know. Anyway, next we have Hodgins. He's sitting at his desk in the middle of the lab because he refuses to have his own office. And Fisher approaches him Because Fisher sees that Hodgins looks like kind of despondent, and Fisher likes this. He's feeding off everyone's despair. Anyway, they start discussing after we determine that basically Fisher's looking for mentorship. So then they start discussing like some of the particulates he found, and they're trying to figure out how all this stuff happened. Anyway, they found that some copy toner ink on the victim's sweater in weird places, like on the front and the back of the sweater. So Fisher says, well, maybe she's like rolling around on the floor in the copy room, right?
Yeah.
So Hodgins kind of perks up a little bit, and he's like, this is an interesting theory. And so that, you know, they're just going with this idea that maybe they need to check out the copy room or something like that. And then Fisher starts to get all poetically morbid and, you know, how life is pointless and we're all going to die again, this kind of stuff. And Hodgins goes, go away. He tells him to go away. He tells him to take off. And I thought it was really funny the way he was like, okay, you can leave now. Goodbye. Like, I don't need this.
Which first he was like, oh, okay. Like, he actually found his analysis pretty helpful. And then he was like, okay, that's enough.
Okay. You're cut off. Bye. I think that's really funny.
That's enough. Yeah. It was great.
I've had enough of you.
Okay. We are back with Booth and Brennan. They're in the office building. And they're just chatting again about I don't understand why they keep bringing down this workplace.
They're not chatting. They're bickering.
They're bickering. Okay, they're bickering. They're bickering. I'm sorry. Also, Ted Russo didn't do it. The keys don't match. Just FYI.
Right. Yeah.
Brennan is talking about how it's a very efficient workplace because they have all these cubicles and people can't interact with each other. And it's just so great. And Booth is like, no, this is so demoralizing. I'm not some kind of drone. Stop comparing me to these drones. And they're having this conversation at full volume. Everyone can hear them. Like, these poor drones can hear them. And anyway.
It's so funny the way he says, I'm not a drone. And then he says, I work for the government. And if I'm a drone, then you're a drone too, because you work for the government too. And she's like, no, I'm a, you know, I'm a contractor, independent contractor. Therefore I'm the queen bee. And he goes, yeah, but you're still in the hive. Cause he can't argue that she's the queen bee. That's what I liked about it. Cause he was like, she goes, I'm the queen bee. And he's like, yeah, but you're still in the hive.
And she's like, yeah, but I'm the queen. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. I just thought it was funny.
They put down this office space, but if you actually look at the FBI, he has his own office, but everyone else has a cubicle.
Yes. And I just want to say, before we talk about what happens next in this copy room that they've gone to investigate for evidence.
Okay.
My absolute favorite forensics lab technician is here, Greenman. His name is not Greenman in the show. I call him Greenman because that's the actor's name. And he is in this show. I love that this guy, he's in so many episodes where he just does this. This is all he does.
Well, it's cool to have the continuity. I like that they have that.
I love him. Everyone I see, I'm like, Greenman's here.
Well, I have a client actually who's a professional extra. So
we've talked about him.
We've talked about him where he's brought into shows. So although this guy actually has lines, I guess. I think my client has lines as well, but I think it's the same kind of idea where these characters who they're background characters, but they're always there. It makes sense that they would always be there.
Yeah. It's like all the people in the lab too. It's great. I love it.
I love it.
We talked about this ad nauseum. I love it so much.
I'm bringing it up again.
No, it's fine. I love it.
So this FBI forensic tech that Kelly loves so much has found some great information. He found some dried toner in a section of the floor and some fabric threads that they think might match with the victim's clothes. So they want him to, Brendan Booth want him to send it back to Hodgins back at the lab. Anyway, there's lots of queen bee talk going on still. This conversation that they were having before carries over into this space. Then they're going to use this lighting to check out the floor and the staining and the carpet. And sure enough, there is a lot of staining on the carpet.
So many stains.
So many stains.
Greenman is actually named FBI forensic tech Marcus Geyer.
Marcus.
I've never heard them say his name, A, B. This is the guy that Hodgins was really rude to. Remember when they were looking at the car and he's like, I'm glad it's not just me that you're rude to.
Yeah.
I'm going to call him Greenman forever.
Okay, we will call him Marcus Greenman.
All right, so we got stains.
Yes, we got stains. So they have to. So they are going to rip this section of carpet out and send it to the lab so that Cam and Hodgins can check it out. They're also going to go through all the victims' hard drives, which I think they had already done at this point. Sorry, yeah, no, they had already done it at this point. So they found this extremely angry email. And so they're going to go check out Dave Farfield, who had written the email, which is not very great. It says, you self-entitled bitch, you are done playing with me. You'll pay, trust me, loves and kisses, Dave. Like, is this something that you put in an email? Wouldn't this be something you would handwrite if you don't want to get caught?
Well, he's already been fired, so why does he care?
Still. Okay. Anyway.
It's 2008.
I guess so. So. Anyway.
All right. So here we go. They bring Dave Fairfield down to the FBI to interview him in the interrogation room. And he
they
doesn't
talk to
know
Gary
that...
first.
Oh, do
I
we?
I think so.
Okay.
Because they go and ask Gary about, sorry, they go and ask Gary about Dave because they're like, who is this Dave guy? And so they're like, oh, yeah. So Dave, he worked here a long time, like 8 years, but we actually just let him go last Thursday. And so he actually got fired because of Patty.
Yeah.
Obviously. Because she claimed that he was problematic and not doing his work. Not doing his work.
Right.
And yeah, so she showed him that email that they had just uncovered, and he agreed that she should be fired, that he should be fired. So yeah, he knew that he was fired because of Patty. So I think maybe this is a person that they want to bring down to interrogate. Sorry, take it away, Kelly.
Well, no, I just love Gary's reaction to, like, oh shit. Like, he knew that Patty was the one who got him fired. He's yeah. Like, oh no, what if he killed her?
No.
He was like, shit. Anyway, be careful. Be careful, guys out there. Be careful. I love Dave. I'm just going to say this guy cracks me up because we bring him down to the FBI to be interrogated in the interrogation room, and he's being shown the car with the word bitch scratched into it. He's like, oh yeah, like he's denying doing it. And then he's like, oh, it's just like Patty to call the FBI because I scratched bitch into her car. Like, he doesn't know that she's dead yet.
No.
He thinks that he's been called down there because of the vandalism. He's yeah. So mad because, like, we find out that Patty, this is great information, because we find out, sorry, I'm gonna move around here. We find out that Patty's a bitch. Like, he's right to call
her
that.
She's terrible.
She's terrible. So it turns out that she fucked him over every day. She would, like, screw up and, like, park, like, with intention to mess him up so that he couldn't get in or out of his car. And then she'd do things like go around the office and, like, she complained that people, you know, either use too much coffee cream, and then she'd reprimand, get people written up for all these different things. And then he said that he got reprimanded and written up for using the internet too much. And he's like, I'm the IT guy. Like, I need to use the internet. Like, she's so unreasonable, right? And he finds out that she's dead, and he's like, oh, well, okay. Like, I didn't do it. Another guy who should have called a lawyer before going in there and being questioned, A, B. He's wearing a suit and tie.
Yeah.
Is he coming from his new job that he got within, like, literally
3 days?
Hours?
Maybe he's interviewing?
I don't know, because I was like, wow, that was quick that he got a job so quickly. A, B. I was also thinking he is an IT guy, so he could probably get a job pretty quickly.
Yeah.
He denies killing her regardless. So they need to just check out his alibi. And his alibi, yeah, he tells them that he was, the day he got fired, he went out and got drunk. And he was at this bar. And Chip from the office drove him home because he was too drunk to drive home. And he played on his computer on this online game. And there were all these people online with him that he gave him their handles. So he had all these funny handles that people use in online gaming for Booth to double check to make sure that he was online and stuff. So it's, that's pretty solid alibi, in my opinion.
I think so. Would have shown that he's online and playing. So
also, I hate people like working with people like this. Have you worked with people like this? I know you haven't had a ton of jobs.
Yeah. People like Patty?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
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 They're everywhere. Just like, so you
micromanager.
Know.
Yeah.
They're everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah.
Like one of those people that's like, but then also very just evil. Evil. Like,
I would say most people, like your average person, is pretty nice, but you run into some characters.
Well, anyway, we hate Patty.
Yeah. She was kind of a bitch, it sounds like. Okay. So they have Patty's skeleton all laid out, all almost 1,300 pieces of it. Fisher's gone through and has completely recreated her whole skeleton, which is pretty incredible, and Cam is quite impressed. Of course, he's like, oh no, I suck, it's horrible. But he's figured out something pretty important, and that is that it looks like the victim was stomped after she was killed. So while she was laying there, someone decided to stomp on her after she had already died. They have not yet figured out the cause of death, which is why he insists that he sucks. But Cam says that if he gives her cause of death, she's going to give her a Kierkegaard t-shirt. What is that?
Okay. Brittany.
Obviously, that pop culture is not great.
It's not pop culture. Kierkegaard. Okay, I don't want to be wrong about this. I'm just going to put him up here. Kierkegaard. The fact that it's spelled Kierkegaard. He's a philosopher. He's from, he's Danish. And he's very famous for, let me just see here. What is the main idea of Kierkegaard? His work focused mainly on Christian ethics, the institution of the church, and the difference between logic and the attempt to find factual, objective proofs of Christianity in contrast to recognizing the individual's subjective relationship with God. So he talked a lot about, he's an existentialist, I guess is the main thing. He's an existentialist. He's like the father of existentialism. So he expresses doubt. Like he's always doubting everything.
So you know it would be a good t-shirt.
He doubts the existence of God. He doubts the existence of evil. He doubts the existence of joy. He doubts the existence of whatever. So everything's questioned. Okay. Like, just like this guy, Fisher.
Yeah.
Who's like, yeah, but they're going to die. It's like, yeah, they're beautiful now. But we're all going to end up as, you know, food for worms. You know, it's just like,
life sucks and then you die.
It's like you enjoy, you're like, oh my God, like the solar eclipse was an amazing experience. And then, oh yeah, but what's the point? You know,
what's the point? We're all going to die.
Sorry, it took me a long time to explain who Kierkegaard
was. No, it was a good explanation. I thought it was going to be like a band.
I'm going to get a picture of Fisher. I'm going to put a Kierkegaard t-shirt on him. That's what I'm going to do. I wonder if they ever give him one.
Life sucks and then you die. That's it.
I wonder maybe if they do give him one.
Yeah. Okay, so we're at the Royal Diner now, and Sweets is sitting at a table reading a paper, and he's just trying to mind his own business, eating some fries. Angela corners him, sits down, starts talking at him and is like, how do I deal with Hodgins? I know we broke up, but like, I got to figure this out. And Sweets is like, well, you got to figure out why you had an unsuccessful relationship, which she doesn't like that. And anyway, she tries to make some example about how he doesn't live with his parents anymore. So that must be an unsuccessful relationship too. It makes no sense. She makes no sense. She's eating his fries. It's kind of sad. He somehow, something he says lights a fire under her and is like, you know what? Maybe, yeah, I think I figured it out. You were super helpful. Okay, bye. Anyway, she just like eats his fries and leaves, basically. He's offering to give her therapy and she just is not going for it. She just stomps on him and leaves, basically. Oh, poor guy.
Based on this conversation that Angela has with Sweets, we can determine not only have we figured out who Kierkegaard is, but we can also determine that Angela is a sociopath.
Oh my God, yeah.
Who walks around her life without asking any questions about any choice that she makes. She just makes her choices. She's pure id. So she's walking around going, oh, this is great. I'm going to go do this today, which explains why she married a dude on a beach in like Fiji.
Yeah.
And then left him and then came back to the States and then started jacking up with this guy and was going to marry this guy. Like, she has no, like, concept of consequence.
She has no compass.
Effect. Well, she has no cause and effect kind of radar. It's sociopathic.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't believe that Angela is meant to be a sociopathic character. So
no.
Why is she being written this way?
I think she's just supposed to be flighty, is how they're meaning to write her.
That's not flighty. That's sociopathic.
But it's not. Yeah.
That's like crazy.
And the way that she comes in and like,
Hodgins dodged a bullet.
Oh my God. But will he dodge it forever?
Listen, I'm not a Hodgins fan, but he dodged a bullet with this one. Because my God, how do you live with somebody like that?
Yeah, she's a mess.
Yeah.
But apparently she's not going to go to therapy because she just doesn't have time. So anyway.
Whatever.
So, yeah. Okay, well, we end up back in Cam's office and Hodgins walks in. And they seem to have found some bodily fluid on the victim's skirt.
Right.
And they think Cam immediately is like, okay, that's definitely semen. Just FYI. So if you were to go and look at the stains on the copy room floor, compare them to what's on the skirt, you'll probably find that the semen matches the skirt and the floor.
Right.
So, yeah, that's it. That's the extent of it.
That's exciting, though.
It is. Although
it's a
crazy.
Good find.
It's a good find.
You think it's crazy?
But it's insane. Like, this lady has toner and semen on her. What was she doing? What was Patty up to? So, anyway, we're back with Booth and Brennan. We're at this office building area. Yes. Do you want to take it away?
I just want to say we have this hilarious kind of throwaway moment when we have Booth and Brennan returning to the office building.
Yeah.
They're walking outside the building. They're wading through a whole bunch of office workers who are smoking outside. And it just made me, this is so funny. This, I'll say this about this episode. It's so funny how the commentary they're making on office work. It's so funny because, I mean, it's relevant today. And how people don't want to go back to the office anymore, you know? And I just think because I used to be one of those people who would be smoking outside an office building. And I just thought it was really funny. Like, just the way that
you can relate.
Like two, like a throwaway scene where they're just walking through this bunch of smoking people, and Brennan's like, like, how do I like this? It's just so, it's funny.
They have very little. Well, they do talk a little bit about important things, which
tell me what they say.
Booth tells us that Patty used the boss's credit card to order her food on Friday night. Then he hears about this whole Booth, the semen situation, because that's what Brennan tells him, but the semen, like, maybe matching on the skirt and the sweater or the floor. So then Booth's like, okay, well, maybe she was sleeping with her boss and she's trying to go to the top. And anyway, they want to confront the boss, Gary, of the office. And so they go up there and he's standing in the middle of the office and they're like confronting him and demanding his DNA and a copy of his credit card statement. Again, yeah. None of these people have heard of lawyers. I just think it's wild to me. And so the next scene, we have Gary sitting in the interrogation room with Booth and Brennan.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, turns out that, so Patty was actually blackmailing him, which is wild. Brutal.
Wild.
So at first it was just for the occasional business expense, but then it became a serious problem. She caught him doing some things that he shouldn't have done. I can't remember like what it was, though.
Oh, is something so... This is a thing that I want to talk about at the end. I'll make a note of it now.
Oh, he was buying office supplies and reselling them online for extra money.
Something
that's what he
like
was doing.
That. Yeah.
So something like... they accuse him of having... Of sleeping with Patty. And he's like, right. No, I'm a married man. Like, no, thank you. Also, did you see the frogs? Like, but she figured out that he was doing this, so she blackmailed him and said, listen, I won't report you, but you need to like let me order room service, massage, like basically use your credit card as a free-for-all. She bought $300 worth of lingerie on this card as well.
Okay. I have questions.
Anyway, so
we'll talk.
Yeah, so she basically blackmailed him into being able to use his credit card. And he's adamant, absolutely adamant that he did not kill her despite all of this, because he didn't want to lose his job. He didn't want to go to jail, and he's got a family. So he opens his mouth without his lawyer present and just, they swab it and we'll find out what happens with that. But what?
Crazy.
This lady is insane. Frog lady is crazy.
Crazy.
So where do we end up? We're back at the lab.
Well, I'll just mention too, this is also a confirmation from Gary that everyone hated this woman.
Yeah, definitely.
Back at the lab.
You didn't sound very likable.
Fisher is going over his findings with Brendan, and he says basically after some experimentation and comparing the size of her hips to the size of the hole that she would have had to be stuffed through, it wouldn't have been possible. So then he's complaining, like he's talking about her hips and the, you know, how women's hips give life and how she's dead. And he's like going on like this. Anyway, they both agree at the end of this that she was dumped from the 16th floor rather than the top of the shaft. So Brennan hurriedly says she'll call Booth to tell him this. Cam walks in at this time and tells him that the semen does not match the boss.
Yeah.
But the skirt and the carpet have, it's the same semen, but it doesn't match Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then we have a quick like C plot with Angela and Hodgins, where Angela out of nowhere approaches Hodgins on the platform and is like, hey, so I know there's some tension between us, but like, I just want you to know that like, I don't regret anything we did. I'm glad that we did whatever we did. And just, I want you to know that we're cool and I'll be fine with it. I'm just going to accept that. And yeah. And then she just walks away and he's like, okay.
It's
yeah, they just
so
agree
intense.
to be cool. They just agree to be cool with each other, I guess,
Yeah,
because
they're not gonna be
she's,
weird.
I guess, yeah, they're not going to be weird, but I mean,
Too late.
I think it's a little bit too late for that.
Yes,
So back
definitely.
at, apparently, I'm assuming this is at the office.
Yes.
Where the office building where Patty died. Booth and Brennan are trying to open the elevator door on the 16th floor manually. So they're trying to open it up with their hands. Our Booth's there trying to pull the door, and he can't do it. Then Brennan notices that he has this pink box of treats, and she's like, "What's that for?" And he's basically trying to buy treats for the human resources department so he'll get this chair. So he's trying to bribe them into giving the chair. Booth can't open the door by himself, so Brennan tells him, "Well, I guess you're not as strong as you think you are." And then he starts saying, "I'm strong. I'm stronger than anybody here." And she goes, "Well, maybe you need that chair after all." Like, she starts making these really hilarious comments.
It's so awesome.
I love it when she does this because it destabilizes him so much. It cracks me up.
Oh my gosh, he's like, what are you talking about? I'm perfectly strong. Like, it's just everything's fine. But so they think they, by the end of this scene, they've concluded, because of course Booth can't be that weak, that there must have been two people involved in this murder. This is the
Yeah,
first
that's
time
what.
we have any hint that this is even the case
Yeah.
after he calls himself Hercules.
Yeah.
Compared to these office workers, I'm Hercules. Give me a break. And it's like, okay, calm down. Everything's fine.
It's not wrong.
No. So this is when we finally figure out, back at the lab, we're figuring out
Back of
how the
the
victim
lab.
died. Back at the
Yes.
lab. So
Yeah.
it turns out that her cause of death, now that Fisher has put together 1,263 bone fragments and checked them twice, that now that he's done some staining, he has realized that there was some blunt force trauma and an aneurysm that ruptured that would have caused her death, which probably meant that the victim actually died by accident, but whoever killed her thought that they killed her and so dumped her body down, like thought that they were the one that killed her, like in cold blood, and dumped her body down this elevator shaft. So they look at the markings closely, and Brennan notices that there's two dots in the bone and a little bit in a vertical line, which immediately they realize that she was killed by a staple,
Yeah.
which is psychotic. That's
It's
insane.
wild. Wild.
Wild. I
I
love
love
it.
how Fisher, in these moments, like when Brennan walks in and checks his work, she compliments him immediately after he's already put himself down. And then he gets very buoyed. Like he gets like, "Oh my gosh." Like, "Oh," like he feels very like happy that she complimented him on his work. And then he goes back down. Like he doesn't spend
Yeah.
a lot of time feeling good about himself, but it's quite funny. And after, yeah, so they figure out that she was killed accidentally. But the whole
Yeah.
shoving her down the elevator shaft, that's a whole other ball of wax,
Yeah.
right?
That's not
So
accidental.
next, we have Booth and Brennan are sitting at the Royal Diner. This I really enjoyed because Booth's eating soup, she's having a salad, they're talking about the case, and he's saying that Booth's saying that whoever threw the stapler at Patty didn't mean to kill her, and then they have this philosophical, like this debate about whether that's true or not. And then Brennan, I love it, she's like, I'll concede, like she just
Yeah.
concedes, right, to his argument. Hodgins walks in and interrupts them. And he immediately dives for Booth's fries. Everybody wants to eat these French fries at the Royal Diner. And the Booth pulls his plate away, like, "No, you're not eating my fucking fries." Then he tells them that he found evidence of a cocktail called a Blue Hawaiian on where Patty was stomped on by a shoe. So they think that whoever stomped on her was in a place that served Blue Hawaiians. They decide that the guy Dave, who got fired, was at a bar drinking.
Yeah.
And They serve blue Hawaiians and little monkey head, sort of coconut colored monkey head glasses, which Brennan raised her eyebrow at a booth for knowing. And they figure, well, Dave's not the guy because Dave has an alibi. And then Booth goes, yeah, but the guy he was with, Chip, does not have an alibi. And we haven't talked to him about this whole situation. He wasn't alone.
Chip the one who announced in the very first scene that Patty was there late after he was there?
So after Booth says this, Booth's like, okay, this is great. Let's go check out Chip. So Booth gives Hodgins, he says, you can have a fry now. And then Brendan gets a call and it's Cam calling them back to the lab with some more evidence. Yeah. And Hodges starts talking about his relationship with Angela. Booth and Brennan stand up and walk out. They're like, have the fries and pay the bill. I was laughing so hard because Booth's like, I don't want to hear about your relationship, bud. And he can afford to pay their bill at the fucking Royal Diner, everybody. Relax.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. So they did the DNA test that was run on Gary's saliva. She discovered that basically when they ran this, they discovered the likely ethnicity of the semen, of who the semen came from. And that the killer was likely a man of Asian descent, which kind of doubles down on Chip being involved because he's a man of Asian descent.
Right. But the way Booth says to Cam, oh, how'd you find that out? Is it because of the way they swim? The sperm you found? Is that the way they swim? She goes, no, there were 43 genetic markers.
You can probably tell from their little tails, right?
And Booth goes, oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that probably makes sense. So Cam doesn't even realize that she's been helpful because in this office space, there's only one Asian person. It's not a very multicultural office space. So it actually works out in their favor because it's very obvious who this person is quickly.
I agree. But also there was a South Asian dude. And I thought, what if they got that?
Oh, true.
Because there's South Asian, East Asian. Like, you know, there's different people from different parts of Asia.
Yeah, they just said Asian. Which is a large continent.
Would never happen today, guys.
So, they bring Chip in, obviously. Yes. And Chip is like, or Booth is like, listen, buddy, we found the stapler. The murder weapon. And Chip is like, oh, shit. Okay, well, you know what? Let me tell you everything. I like Patty. Let me tell you everything that I could possibly tell you. I was sleeping with her. And I wanted it to end. So I told her after a couple drinks, I told her that, like, you know what? This has to be done. And she said, no, that I don't take that for an answer. And then she threatened to, like, get me fired. And so I threw the stapler at her. She just dropped and they're like, oh, well, she had an aneurysm. Like, it was an accident. You ruptured it, whatever. And then I panicked. And I just dragged her to the elevator. And I got rid of her. And Booth is like, how? How did you get rid of her? And he's like, what do you mean? What do you mean, how? So they bring him over to the elevators. And this guy, it is so funny watching him trying to open this elevator himself. He's like, trying to get this thing pried open. He can't even get it open like more than a centimeter. So he's like, no, yeah, no, it was me. It was definitely me. No one was helping me. And they're adamant that someone must have been helping him. And so they are able to get the doors open a little bit. And inside, Brennan bends down and she finds a blue fingernail. So, Mr. Chip, looks like you had a little helper after all.
Right. So the next scene, we see, first of all, did we notice that Chip was in the conference room. They were interviewing in the conference room of the office. And then the next we have the scene opens on a set of hands with blue nail polish fingernails. Yeah. And we pan up and it's our friend, the receptionist, Christine, from the very beginning of the episode. And let's just make it quick. At the end of the day, it was her and Chip actually who were getting it on in the copy room.
Yeah.
I have questions about this.
Yeah. They're rolling around on the ground in the copy room.
But why does Patty have semen on her?
Because when they killed her, I think they had to roll the body.
Okay.
Like that's over. Fine. I think that's my thinking. That they
question answered.
I think they couldn't. They couldn't carry her. Something. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense then. Because I was like, wait, is he having sex with both of them? But he was lying to protect Christine because at the end of the day, they were caught by Patty having sex in the copy room and she was going to get them fired. So Christine got mad at her and threw a stapler at her. The stapler went into her temple, fucking bust this aneurysm out of her brain. She died.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Then they went. Okay, this is my question. She starts crying, of course. Christine's upset. Booth's consoling her. Because, I mean, it was all an accident. It was all in the heat of the moment. But how do you get from, like, hitting her accidentally with this fucking stapler to shoving her into an elevator shaft?
Yeah.
Like, there has to be a period of time that passes. Yeah, where you're thinking, maybe we shouldn't do this.
Well, also, what's your plan? Like, it's not like the body's gonna hit the bottom of the elevator shaft. Like, there's an elevator below you. You're on the top floor. There's no hiding this body. And
I have questions about this. So yes. So many questions.
This goes back to the first scene, though, when everyone else is like, oh, what's that smell? Chip is looking around. He's not wondering what the smell is. If you go and watch that first scene again.
Okay.
He's looking around like, oh shit.
Like he made the smell.
Yeah. And even when they announce, like when Booth and Brennan come by the office and tell the receptionist, the way the receptionist reacts, once you know that she's part of this situation, it's so over the top. And so like, oh my God. Oh no, it's Patty. And even Chip being like, Chip looks like, oh shit. So it's interesting. When I went back to watch it again, I was like, oh, there's some indications.
I'm
going to
watch it again can I just quickly get through this next scene? Because then next. So we got we've caught our culprit. Fine. Next, we have Brennan visiting Booth at his office. He is regaling us. He's so excited because he has received the chair, the coveted chair. And he knows that Brennan made a phone call to human resources. He's like, I don't know what you said, but I didn't have to give her treats. I didn't have to bribe her. I didn't have to write a letter, nothing. And she was very kind and said, you know, I just told them how important you are and how you're very, you're a valued person in this organization. You work really hard. You have all these wonderful qualities, including, you know, being brave and courageous and also very sensitive. And he goes, sensitive? What? And she's like, well, you were very sensitive with the woman just now in the interrogation room. Like, you were very kind to her, even though she just killed somebody, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, he makes a joke about, haha, he sits down in this chair. And within almost seconds, this chair is a fucking lemon. Like it's uncomfortable. The padding's messed up. It's an old chair. It doesn't have all the new features. And then at one point, which I thought was really funny, because you can see David Boreanaz in the scene. You can see hear him pressing the button, but it was really funny because the chair like suddenly drops down, so you can only see the top of his head, and he's like, you know, I gotta fix this too. It's not, you know, it's not working very well. Anyway, I just thought it was funny because the whole chair started malfunctioning immediately after.
Oh, it was
he got
hilarious.
It.
He wanted yeah. it so badly, and then he's like, oh, this is actually kind of a piece of
the
shit.
Lesson. The lesson is be careful what you ask for, and yeah. thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ass. I'm telling
yes.
you.
Yes. I will. So when I first came back to work, I've learned, like, I've trained myself, like, I keep it in mind, I guess, subconsciously, not to do this. But when I yeah. first came back to work, my office chair, I like to put my feet kind of back in my seat, uh-huh. like underneath me.
Yeah.
But where my foot hits, if I'm wearing like platform boots, then, or like a heel at all, then right. where my foot hits,
it clicks the thing.
It clicks that thing and I go straight down.
Oh my God, you could break your ankle.
I know. So it happened to me a couple times, and then I did it by accident, and then I think I like it clicked and I stopped doing it. I don't keep my feet there anymore. But anyway, when he did that, it reminded me. I was like, oh my God. Okay. What did you think of this episode?
I just watched the scene where they were smelling the elevator.
Right?
Yes. Absolutely. You know what? It wasn't a strong one. I'll tell you that. I wasn't that impressed with the way the women were written, as usual. I usually have an issue with the way the women are written. I don't think it really moved the needle in terms of the relationship between Booth and Brennan at all. Like,
yeah,
they're,
I'll agree with that.
There was some interesting science. I love the eyeball thing.
Yeah.
What was that called again? Humor. Something humor.
Ventricle humorous or something.
Oh my God. We're so bad. Let me look here. Vitreous humor. Vitreous humor.
That's the one.
So it's kind of like when you die, it's like, you know, people used to believe like, they would try to take photographs of your eye to see if like they could see, you could see your murderer, things like that. But it's kind of like that. You can see like what time you died, all these things. It's wild.
It's cool information.
Important. I love eyeballs. Eyeballs are cool.
They are cool. I like it.
Who's your king? Who's your king of the lab?
You're going to hate it.
Yeah, I know who exactly. I know who it is.
My king of the lab is Fisher because, first of all, his character is hilarious. But second of all, and most importantly, he had the single most important piece of information for this whole case. Without him, they would not have solved this case as quickly. He had the study about falls from height, so he was able to figure out very quickly that it was either the machine room or the top floor that this body came from. And so that eliminated 15 other floors that they had to look at. So I thought that that was pretty impressive. How about you? Who's your king?
Before we talk about the king, I just want to mention, if you are selling office supplies on the DL and somebody catches you, let them call you out. It's not worth giving them your credit card and being blackmailed, okay?
It's crazy.
If you throw a stapler at someone and they die unexpectedly,
call the police.
Call 911 and tell them you got into a fight and this is what happened. I'm telling you, it will be much better.
Like, yeah.
Crime, this kind of stuff just does not pay. It just creates like bad situations. The other lesson from this episode is to call a lawyer.
Oh my God, literally no lawyers were present during this whole
the
episode.
The minute an FBI agent shows you their badge, you call a lawyer. And why is this an FBI case?
No idea. Gary, not Gary, David, who's uh-huh. the guy who got fired? He had
David
had that point. He's like, "What is this an F? Why is this an FBI case?"
Okay, King. Like, can I tell you, I have six to choose from and I don't know which
one
to choose.
Oh my God. Fisher, number one.
No, not Fisher.
Is he on your top six?
I started with Ted from The Office because I thought
okay.
he was funny.
Yeah.
Then I love Dave who got fired. I thought he was really funny. Cam, of course, because she's the best.
Of course.
Chip.
Okay.
For like covering for his lady.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet.
Christine for killing Patty. I thought it was very good of Christine to do that. But I think my choice is going to be Greenman, just because I'm just so happy to see him. And he always gets kind of the shit jobs. Like, he has to deal with fucking Hodgins, and he had to deal with like cutting up semen covered carpet. And he has like the dirtiest job. He has the dirtiest job. I mean, Hodgins' job is pretty dirty. He has to deal with bugs and stuff.
But he wants to.
But Greenman has to deal with, like, pretty gross stuff.
Maybe Marcus Greenman wants to do that as well. I don't know.
Marcus Geyer / Greenman. I'm going to call him my king. Who's your lab rat?
Angela is my lab rat because that girl. First of all, did she contribute at all to this case? I don't think so, other than possibly a little bit identifying the victim. But otherwise, she's a wreck. She needs to get her shit together. How about you?
I was thinking Angela too, but I've changed my mind. I've decided this is the second time I've ever done this. And it's not going to be the last, I'll say this. Patty. Patty's my lab rat. Because she's a horrible person, and she made everyone's life a living hell. And she wore a bow on the side of their head, and she
and we're glad she's in the dead.
Parking garage, and she blackmailed her boss for selling fucking reams of paper. Like, who cares? who cares?
Yeah.
And like, have sex, like, don't have sex in the copy room, guys. Can you, like,
that seems like a basic rule.
Cam found out Hodgins and Angela were fucking in the supply room. And nothing happened to them. So, Patty, just let them, like, figure it out.
Let them, because eventually they'll break up, like Hodgins
and Angela. That, or they can get married and move in together, and then they can have sex at home, you know, or go to a different floor. Go to a different office and have sex. Go to the bathroom. Literally anywhere else. Floor. Just go somewhere else. Don't do it here. Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
That's fair. I think I did like this episode.
Okay.
Sorry,
I never asked.
No, I just realized I didn't share. I think I did actually like this episode. It was a little bit, just because we're introduced to one of the interns that I grew quite fond of, because he's quite funny.
You are biased.
I think I'm biased because of that, but I agree with you. It did not bring forward Booth and Bren's relationship. It definitely didn't help Angela and Hodgins. That is like a huge step back, I think, even from the last episode.
Oh my god.
Sweet's character, I thought that they were starting to show some respect for him. This took a step back.
No.
It was just brutal. They were like horrible to him.
Poor Angela. They didn't even bring him in to like do a psychological assessment, which is why he's here.
And Angela just ate his fries and left. So mean.
Sociopath.
So, yeah. So just general sadness. But the actual content of the case was kind of interesting. Like, the fact that the body was all the way down the elevator shaft, although gruesome, made for an interesting case because they had to approach it from a different angle. They didn't just have, like, a fully intact skeleton ready to go.
It's wild, eh? Like, you know, it's just wild that they can figure this out.
Yeah.
It's good detective work. It's good detective work. I appreciate the thoroughness, you know?
100%.
And the hard science. We love it. All right, honey. What do we say? Thank you again for everybody for listening. Again, thanks for getting us to a place of, you know, getting those downloads up there. We really appreciate your support. And yeah, I'm just glad that we're doing this, Brittany. I'm very grateful to you for showing up.
You as well. Especially
at this time of year. It's very difficult. I know. And I appreciate you setting aside the time for us. I'm going to tell everybody to follow us on Instagram, follow us on TikTok, email us. That's quintcastpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to talk to us, leave a review. You can leave me a 5-star review and call me whatever you want. You know what I mean? You can call me names. You can tell me I have a terrible voice. I don't care. As long as you leave me a 5-star review, I'll take the abuse.
You can even call us Green Men, even though that's not our name.
Don't call me Patty. Anyway.
Oh, definitely not. Or Angela or Hodgins. Just don't go there.
All right. So on that note, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Squintcast. See you Nailed next it. Time.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Squintcast with me, Kelly Booth, and my and your new friend, Brittany Elsner. The Bones theme is performed by The Crystal Method. They can be found on Instagram and YouTube at The Crystal Method and at thecrystalmethod.com. Intro and outro music is by Twisterium at Pixabay. Cover art was done by Irena Dolence Stajan. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at Squintcast. Email us at squintcastpodcast@gmail.com. You can find me at fab_empire_ on Instagram and TikTok. Brittany is at Brittany81523 on Instagram. See you next time.
Hodgins!